All right, Cody, go quick.
Welcome to Opinion Havers, a movie podcast for people who like movies that are just plays.
I'm offended. Why am I offended? Because you called it a play, just a play. But you didn't call it just a play. You said this was a podcast for people who like movies that are just plays. Cody, what movie did we watch?
A Tale of Two Cities.
Why
1935.
Is it important? 1935, which is important. Cody, why is it important?
It's Tyler's favorite movie.
Which you may know if you'd listen to another one that I forgot, Cody. Which podcast did we mention it in? Find it. Tweet it at Cody. I like this movie. It's pretentious. I own all of the Resident Evil movies. Moving on, Cody. Quick synopsis. What is it?
It's about two handsome gentlemen. One in London, one in Paris. And they both fall in love with the same girl during the French Revolution. There's murder, love, judges, lawyers, alcohol, everything you want in a movie.
And to top it all off, a 15-minute failed recording session to start off our evening. Cody?
Yeah.
After that whirlwind of an experience, hold my hand once more, ooh, you sweet, sweet French woman. Let's get in this cart to the guillotine of Spoilerton, Paris, France, EU.
Wow, that was not a very long ride.
No, we got here very fast. Cody, spoiled the movie for me. Why did you get sad?
I got sad because end of the movie. I mean, I had no experience before with The Tale of Two Cities.
None.
Somehow have never heard the entire plot. I just knew there were two cities and it's by Charles Dickens.
You disgust me.
End of the movie? Oh, the alcoholic English lawyer guy that I love so much, who's played by, what's his name? Richard Coleman? Is that his name?
Yep.
Who did, wow, just an amazing, amazing job.
Yeah, he did.
He switches places with the former aristocrat guy that married the woman he loved so that he could go back to England to be safe. He takes his place and he dies.
Mr. Downey?
What? What?
So
why?
A side note to you.
Why did you do this to me?
You said, so it's the two, the IMDb, was it the IMDb synopsis said the two lookalikes?
Yeah, pair of lookalikes.
To which you were like, oh, they do not look alike.
Yeah.
Traditionally, the role of Mr. Downey, Downey, and what's-his-face? Mm-hmm. Sydney?
Charles Downey.
Downey.
Which sounds like something a Southern, like,
it's
like Louisiana would say. I mean, which I guess is French, part of the South. I picture you as like a Southern vibe, like, Mr. Downey.
A Southern Downey.
And Sydney Cotton.
Cotton. Are usually played by the same person.
What?
But Coleman said he would play Cotton. He'd always wanted to play Sydney. Sweet, sweet Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted to only play him. He didn't want to have to play both roles.
Which is some ways good, some ways bad.
Even shaved his mustache, which he loved.
Wow.
This is his thing. Also, for any of you who don't know who Richard Coleman is.
Ronald Coleman.
Ronald Coleman, sorry.
I ruined us.
I hate you so much right now. For any of you who don't know who he is, totally reasonable. He died probably 50 years before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
He was Cody's favorite glistening man.
Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston. That sweet, sweet glistening boy. Before Charlton Heston was Charlton Heston. Mm-hmm. Meaning he was a big, big star.
Big boy.
He was in like 18 movies a year, and they all won or got nominated for Oscars because he was in all 18 big movies. Anything that he wasn't in was a crap movie.
Yeah.
That's about how it worked. Fun fact.
So
the guy who directed this movie made enough money from this movie to make his own production company and totally bypass MGM.
That's amazing. And here's the thing. Here's the thing about Ronald Coleman only playing the one part. The guy that played the other part, the first 5 minutes, I was like, he's doing pretty good. After those first 5 minutes, I was like, nah, this guy's not great. Like,
he was a very stereotypical
just okay
dude.
I mean, he is pretty handsome, so I'm like, okay, I get why that lady, the lady would be like, yeah, I'll marry this guy. But it was just like, after those first few minutes, I was like, yeah, no, you kind of, what are you even doing here? You're not nearly as good as Ronald Coleman.
Yeah. But I think it adds, personally.
Because he wins you over so much, you're like, ah, he's so smart, and he's so cool, and I'm on his team, and I know he's flawed, but isn't he the best, and he helps out all these people, he's great, he's the best.
Yes.
And the other guy's just like, hey, I'm a pretty good dude.
Toast. Your favorite food.
I don't know. So, yep. Made me real sad. And here's the thing about the end of this movie. Number one, why are they playing so much Christmas music the whole time? Christmas songs, left, right, the score, all over the place, Christmas hymns. Then, at the end of the movie, gives his life, they kill him, pans up the guillotine, and then it gives the scripture, and I'm like, that doesn't make me feel better. I think it mentioned something about, what scripture was it? It mentioned something about the resurrection or something, something from New Testament, I want to say. Anyway, I was still sad. Scripture did not help me out. Neither did the Christmas music. I was like, you are not cheering me up. I still feel bad.
Yeah. Pretty sure it was released around Christmas. A lot of the scenes are during the snow season.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you something?
Please.
How would you pronounce a French aristocrat of fairly significant import?
How would I pronounce it?
Yes.
What does that mean?
You know what I want.
I don't know what you want.
The Danae's uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Evremont.
Mm-hmm.
What was his title?
I don't know. Tell me.
So they repeatedly called him the Marquess Evremont.
The Marquess?
Yes. What? I'm like, that.
What is it? What is?
Which I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, nuts.
What?
There are two pronunciations given.
Share them, please.
Marquis, which I think most people are familiar with, and Marquess. Both wholly accurate pronunciations. Of the European title of nobility. It's
like you and I were talking about liqueur and liqueur.
Yes.
And same word. Two pronunciations. Sickened
with myself that I that say
you
with
say the French way.
Yeah, the proper way, but I'm still disgusted.
No, they're both myself. Proper.
No.
That's the point. There's two ways to say it. One is far more French than the other, and I choose the patriotic way. Liqueur.
Which, if I were to think which one is the French way and which way is the English way to say Marquis, Marquess does seem much more like it would flow a lot better in a French sentence than Marquis, which has a hard
Mar,
which is a hard stop.
Marquis, yeah.
Yeah, like Marquis Mark.
Marquis, is that where he gets his name from?
There you go.
Mark, what's the other way to say it?
Marquess.
Marquess Mark.
You gotta say it, not Marquess, not Mark West. Marquois.
Marquess. Marquess.
Yeah, I get a little Marc. Bit. Marquess.
A lot of people don't know this.
Yes.
Mark Wahlberg, his uncle, is an escaped French aristocrat. That's where they get all their money from.
Wow.
That's how they fund their Wahlburgers.
Did you know?
No.
Are you familiar with the Hy-Vee?
Yes.
I was looking at
the grocery store in the Midwest.
Yes. Employee owned. I was looking at their, they have a restaurant, a very good, fancy restaurant that's weirdly attached to them.
Uh-huh.
You go in and they're like, this is like actually pretty.
It's like a real bar and grill that just happens to be attached to a grocery store.
It's like super, it's like a brand new any restaurant, mm-hmm. but it's like that all the time.
Hmm.
It's always very clean. All their food is very good. You can get like a $30 steak there.
Huh. Why haven't you bought me a $30 steak yet?
I go and get one every single Tuesday.
What?
On their thing, it says our Wahlburger menu is only in store. And I thought, Excuse me. They have Wahlburgers.
Wow.
At these market grills. Anyway.
I never looked at Marquess Mark and thought, I need to buy a burger from that man.
When I look at his brother, I get it.
Really?
Yeah. What's his brother's name? Nobody knows. Nobody cares. Darren, probably.
Darren Wahlberg.
How dare you be a moderately famous actor when your brother is Mark Wahlberg? Anyway, we watched a movie from 1935.
7 years before the advent of Marky Mark.
Yes.
You know what else I liked about watching this movie?
Yes.
First off, it was in full screen. I was like, whoa, I forgot how aggressively full screen movies used to be.
Yep.
Two, it was back when MGM still had a real lion. And you saw the MGM logo, but it was like before the one I grew up watching. Like the old MGM. That is like the old MGM logo. I was like, what?
Where it was just a little lion. The big logo. They had a lion sitting behind.
Lion's just sitting there.
Have you seen the pictures of them filming that?
No.
It's nuts. It's just a giant logo that they built. They cut a hole in the middle and sat the lion on a pedestal behind it and had it roar. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know how else you would have done it back then. But they had to do it some way, and that's how they did it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh my gosh.
You doubted me.
What?
When that popped up, I felt the doubt in your soul that this was going to be a good
movie. Also, like, the thing about old movies is they cut a lot less. And so it feels like a much longer movie. You know, it's like much more slowly paced. And I don't know if I was emotionally prepared. And I went through a period the first few minutes I was still getting sold on it. Because I've seen some other old movies that I did not like. For example, Gone with the Wind. And the people watching it clearly just liked it because of certain moments. Like, I watched it with one of my best friends at the time.
The sex scene.
And they thought it was so... Just for whatever reason, their family always quoted the line. There's like one of the handmaids or whatever in the household, and the baby's like coming really soon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fight happening. All this stuff is happening anyway. And the handmaid lady, she might be a slave now that I'm thinking about it, because it takes place in the South right before Civil War. Anyway, one of the slaves.
Remember that. All those girls who like that movie.
Is like, I don't know nothing about birthing no babies. And like, they thought that was the funniest thing just because they grew up with it. But I was like, this isn't like a good movie. Anyway. Point is,
most people, it's like Gone with the Wind. Wasn't it like one of the first? It broke some record.
It was like, it's one of the most successful movies of all time, and it won so many awards. It's the first swear word. It was like a lot of firsts. But anyway, point is, I was like, this is not a movie. And there were a couple moments in this where I was like, Tyler just likes this because of nostalgia. But then as it went, I bought into it. I was like, no, this is actually, I think maybe it was when Ronald Coleman enters, and I was like really sold. I was like, oh, this is good. Anyway, and I got invested, and I was like, no, I like this. I'm interested. This is great. And then they kill him, and I was so mad.
But at the end, his death is the end of the movie. It's not like they
the last 20 minutes, you're just like, I know what's going to happen. No, please. Yeah. Don't do this to me.
You saw it coming a mile away.
I called it. Some of my favorite things about this.
You didn't see it coming.
Some of my favorite things about this.
Yes, tell me.
Someone asks what time it is, but they don't say what time is it. They say, what o'clock is it? And I was like, what? Who does that?
Oh, yeah. They're all French, I'll remind you.
No, they're not. Half of them are French and half are British.
Only two of the main characters are British.
The lady is.
The lady was French. She spent like 10 years in England.
Uh-huh. All the British barristers, the banker guy, he's British.
Banker guy's British. Sydney's British. The dad's French. Darnay's French.
Mm-hmm.
The Marquois.
Charles Darnay. He's not... Yeah. Okay, anyway. Someone else? Someone curtsies at one point, and I just put Shorty gets real low when she curtsies. I don't remember the moment. But I just remember someone curtsies, and I was like, dang, she got real low.
You want to hear a crazy fact? Yeah. I just looked it up just to make sure, just to check the exact numbers. But we all know what the first, what was known as a talkie back then was. Mm-hmm. I mean, who could forget?
The jazz singer. Was that right?
Yes.
Yes.
October of 1927. So this film.
A very taboo film at this point, because It is just a white guy dressed in the most offensive blackface you can imagine being a jazz singer. That's the movie.
This is in 1927. Mm-hmm. This film, 8 years later.
Wow.
I think they went a long way in those 8 years.
Yeah, they really did. That's true.
Can we talk about Sydney?
Yes.
His boss. Uh-huh. What a perfect casting choice.
Yeah.
Let's just reenact the dynamic here, you know?
Okay.
It's mostly face. So I can't... I can kind of...
Not to mention his, like, wall of wigs.
He does have... He's always like... take off my wig. I'm very overweight, Cody. You can see it.
Yes.
You can... I show it a little bit in my gut.
I'm witnessing.
I don't have the jowls to make the fat guy voice, though.
That's too bad.
If I do the... It takes my entire mouth. I can't say anything while I do that. And it amazes me the guys who can talk whilst using their cheeks to flap.
Speaking of casting choices, I also noticed... I made a note that said, eyebrow acting. I love it. But there's the one guy... I think he's kind of like... He's sort of more a CD guy. He's always drinking sort of one of... One of Sydney's friends. And like every...
Bossett.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, because it's Clive and Bossett.
Every line he says, he just does some huge eyebrows. His eyes are really wide or they're real squinted because he's confused and they come down real low and then he like pumps them back up and down a bunch of... I was like, yes. This guy went to like the Eyebrow Academy of Acting Tricks.
You know what my favorite part of that is?
What?
Two things. One, a lot of people... I didn't know if you would say anything, but I know a lot of people who will recognize him because he plays like, you know, like the bad guy. And a lot of like anytime you see black and white footage used in a joke thing, and there's like this seedy dude in the background, like half the time it's him.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, this guy has had some of the most aggressive impact. Of course, he probably learned it from somebody else. It was probably not him that originated it. But that,
well, especially coming out of the silent era, if you think about it.
Survived. Even to today. So, he was a good actor, too. Like, he did a good job in his role. Well.
Yeah.
But yeah, the eyebrows is just like, he's such a sketchy dude. He's so funny.
There were a lot of little moments like that I appreciated. There's one. So, French-British lady. The love interest?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. What's her character's name? I don't remember. Anyway, when she meets her dad, or, you know, doesn't meet her dad, but she goes to get her dad back, and they get...
When the banker tactfully tells her what's happened, and they go to retrieve him.
Yes, of course. And they get on a boat with Charles Darnay. And he's telling her all about the French Revolution and blah, blah, blah. And the line he says, I hope I don't bore you with whatever. And she's like, no, I found it most edifying. And I was like, that's like the doomy eyes of the 18th century. She's like, I found it most edifying. You're like, oh, please keep it in your pants, lady. Your dad is on this boat with you.
Dad was all about it. Wine in the clock bag, just a tip.
All right.
Just a skosh. Two characters I want to highlight. They're seen very little, but I'd be interested. First off, be the banker, which I can't remember his name. I've seen this movie so many times. I've read the book multiple times. Could never remember a single character's name.
It's not Robot Henry Dude. B. Walthall, is it?
No.
Walthall?
It's Mr. something. Old guy.
Oh, I said, no, that's the actor.
Yeah.
Dr. Manette? Nope.
No, Dr. Manet.
Charles Darnay. Striver? Nope.
I'll find his name. But what did you think about him?
Because what are we talking about? Banker?
The banker.
I liked him.
And what did you think? I want to tell you, of all of the people in this movie, in my opinion, he is cast...
Barsad?
Barsat. That's the bad guy. The eyebrow dude.
I don't know these people.
So he's like cast so perfectly.
No,
it's redunk.
This is like for all movies. It had everything. It had a lady passing out, which is just classic old movie.
Oh yeah.
It had big fight scenes.
She was overcome.
Lot of monologues.
So, Barsad. So, yeah, he was just like exactly how he was in the book. And, well, is it the Stryver? It might be Stryver.
Yeah, I think it's Stryver.
It's got to be Stryver. Oh. And the other one would be Evermore.
That's what I was going to say, too. Like, I thought he did the perfect snobby French aristocrat that is not paying attention. Meanwhile, revolution is brewing right under his feet. Like, wow. He did so well. I was like, oh, I want to punch you in the face.
He took a role that I think has, like, one line in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And made it one of the most memorable roles of the movie.
Yeah.
Which I was like, I'm always blown away by how perfectly that guy plays the role. And just like, if you look at pictures of him, I feel like he looks way different all dressed up and everything. Like, he becomes.
Yeah, he really does.
The part. I imagine he went and killed some French peasants to get yeah. into the character.
No joke.
They ran over a child. They covered that child in ketchup. Or was it chocolate pudding? You decide.
Yeah, no, that nigga did a great job.
You want to talk about phoning it in? They built a Bastille. And then to show that a child was dead, they're like, nah, just Bob brought a snack pack. Just go to kind of smear some on there.
Yeah, it is funny with these old movies because, I mean, this is before.
That's probably very
good. This is before, like, the MPAA, you know, and all of this and violent movies. And so, you know, the scene where the kid gets creamed by the. They, you know, you can only show so much, and it can only be so realistic. You know, so it can only do so much. What do you think of their
CG?
What's that?
What do you think of their pro-level CG?
Where?
I mean, obviously it wasn't CG, but when he... Because it shows the kid like going, as the cart's coming right at the screen.
Uh-huh.
Which I always think, this is ridiculous, but that was probably, like, incredible at the time.
Yeah.
How, like, oh, they just ran over this mm-hmm. kid with horses.
Yeah. Well, even... it's just interesting, some of the effects. Like, even they show, well, because Marquis Evremond, he gets assassinated. And during that scene, they show the guy hiding outside his window, and he crawls in, and he's, you know, and they go to stab him, and they cut away. And that's it. That's all they can show.
No, it shows him go. And then it does the classic... does like the music,
right, but it doesn't show the knife going in or anything. Oh, like, yeah, you don't get the angle on that. And same with the guillotine, like, they don't show a guillotine coming down or anything, but they show, you know, it pans up from the head, so you're like, oh, see, the guillotine came down. But,
Jarvis Lorry, that's what I was just saying. I think Stryver's the
judge guy.
No, Stryver's the I think he might be the guy who is the tutor.
Tutor,
or is that Gaspard? That's Gaspard.
I mean,
who's Stryver?
This is a Dickens novel. I'm so digging we need to deep. Understand.
I'm digging deep.
There are 8,000 characters. Stryver and six of them character. Matter.
Anyway, it's what did I say? Lorry.
I don't know.
Jarvis Lorry Jr. He's the young one. He is an agent of Telson's Bank.
Telson's.
Telson's Bank. Anyway, but they never showed anything gruesome per se.
Yeah, but you mentioned that Bastille scene. It was pretty awesome to watch people climbing up the bridge. Yeah, and
that was dope.
I mean, how many background people they got to like run up. I mean, there were hundreds of people in that shot.
Here's the thing. When I first saw this, I was but a wee child. And I did not know that the Bastille was not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It does not exist. It was torn down. So I was just like, oh, so they just like filmed it at the Bastille? And I was told, no, because it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so they built one. Yep. I was like, cool. So they built part of Paris to film this movie. And so,
that's amazing.
They spent, what was it? What did we look it up when after we watched it? Like, they spent over $1 million. Which, in 1935, look, you know, tell me your note. I'll get back to you on this one.
Well, I did have a note. I wonder if this hit home so well and did so well because it was released during the Great Depression. And it's just like this French equivalent of that same time where people were really, really, really poor. So I wonder if it, you know, really connect with the people of that time because of it.
They sucked up the wine off the street.
Exactly.
Did you get that's what that was supposed to be?
No, I was like, they're sucking something off us, the ground. I don't know.
It was wine. I thought about kind of like being like, just so you know, this is wine. But I was like, you seemed into the movie at that point. So I was like, I don't want to break the concentration.
Yeah.
You were in the moment.
My favorite, so the equivalent to the Gone with the Wind, I don't know nothing about birthing no babies line, and this was Cackling Lady. There was a French lady. She was friends with all the Jacques, which is the rebels. Jacques.
Yes. Jacques?
I also didn't know. Yeah. And I anytime anyone said anything, she goes, Ninja?
No. It was more like, I ran out of breath.
And like, for the first half of the movie, I don't recall her saying any lines. I was like, she can't speak, but she can cackle. And then she does say some lines later on. I was like, she just cackles.
She actually has, I think, quite a bit of a lot of lines, but she always cackles at the end. And she says everything really like, she doesn't have, she's like a lady that wears dentures, but they had her take her dentures out.
Yeah.
So she's like, kind of, so she'll be like, you'll say something. Say something. Say something.
We're looking for John Pedreau.
So she says something, but it's like, yeah, you just assume she repeated them.
Yeah, exactly.
And then cackled.
But it sounded like, yeah. Anyway, but she never got old for me. I was like, oh, she's a gem. Cackling lady. Sign me up.
She's a beautiful tale. She's in both cities, really. You just didn't notice her. But yeah, you did mention her more than once. And yes, she is. It is funny how so much of this movie, like, I do wonder, like, when I look at the Cackling Lady and the actual lawyer, because Sidney isn't a lawyer, he's like a legal assistant. And the guy's like the lawyer, I think, with the family and the money and, you know, yeah, all that. But he's like dumb. So Sidney's his brains.
He's the brains behind the whole thing.
And, I always wonder, I'm like, did they realize as they were filming this, like, back then, it's hard to think, was this, was it as funny as it is now? Mm-hmm. Or was that just like, oh, it's just, that's how they are. It's how lawyers are. Mm-hmm. You know? Or if it's like, no, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I do wonder.
Or how, like, weird and awkward the relationship between Donna and, Lady Bird. Was that funny back then, or was that just like, oh, they're just two young things in love?
Yeah. Lucy Manette. Manetti. It's spelled two different ways in these credits.
It's Manet.
There's Manet, and there's a different one that's also different Manet. Anyway. Charles Darnay.
Cody, so if you'll remember, at the end of the film, we talked about how they spent $1.2 million to make this film. In 1935, during the Depression.
Yeah.
How much money do you think that it was now? I'm on the inflation
calculator. $1 million in 1935 today?
I don't think this necessarily takes into account the Depression and all that.
I don't know. Is that like $32 million?
It's $22
million. Hmm. All right.
Do you think you could make a movie half this good for $22 million today? With the, like,
the scope? No way. Not with the scope. Because, I mean, you think about all the under $30 million movies we review. It's like, oh, it's great, but it's got a tiny cast. Or it's, like, a very specific thing. Or it's shot on location places. They're not building these giant sets and getting hundreds of extras and the top acting names of the day. You know, no way.
Yeah. what I want is a remake of this. The Rock is Sydney. No, no. The Rock plays Donnay.
Oh.
And Robert Downey Jr. plays Sydney. Because then when they're like, could you mistake him for him? Well, maybe I could. Yes. I want it. Or do The Rock and Dave Bautista.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. That would be the most ridiculous remake of a movie ever. Take like a classic film that's almost 100 years old and remake it with The Rock and Dave Bautista.
They'd only be able to do that if they moved the Storming Bastille scene to like a 40-minute action sequence.
Yeah. He like drops in. At that point, you have to be like, yeah, he's going to drop in from the helicopter and just power slam down in there. And then he's going to start earthbending or something. Who knows? At this point, give up. M. Night Shyamalan's directing. Who cares?
Oh, man. I did wonder when this was... Especially during the Bastille scene and stuff. I was wondering when Citizen Kane was made.
When?
Go ahead and guess. This was 1935. Citizen Kane was made?
1942.
41. You were so close.
It sucks.
Anyway, because I just know that was a big turning point for movies as far as the way edited films together. And
is that what it was? Is it the editing was like what it was?
I just know I've seen the first couple minutes and the beginning of that movie, it's like it's showing Hearse's estate and it's like bum 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 and it's doing quick cuts between all the stuff, which is like new for that day. They never did quick cuts like that. And so I was wondering, like, there weren't a lot of cuts in this movie. I was like, when is it? This must have been like just before Citizen Kane, and you know, just how that sort of pivoted and changed the way movies were made. But at least that's what I've heard about it. But yeah, mm-hmm. 6 years before Citizen Kane,
a better
so it's
film.
Definitely still at the point where it's like these are plays shot on film and film has to come to its own. It's like this is a very different thing we're doing. Well,
I think this showed kind of what the, you know, the guys who were going to take movies from just, all right, let's just point a camera at a stage and film mm-hmm. it to what they were. Because they saw, you know, you can't show the entire Bastille and the backdrop of Paris.
It's just a set.
On a set.
It's just a set in a play. And then it's like, you okay, know, it's not the same.
But you can't have them like climbing a 30-foot wall and falling into the mode and like pulling down the draw. You can't really have that on
right.
any stage. So it shows like them being like, you know, these huge set pieces.
Right. Oh.
Because it's a set.
I get it.
You know, like these huge scenes are really what this is for. Like the scenes where it's like you follow them through the streets as they're mm-hmm. about to storm it. Like you can't do that. You can't take an audience and follow them actively as they walk through the streets of a town.
Right.
So it is interesting to see like the beginnings of, there's a lot of still, we're going to essentially film a set, we're just going to do it in front of a store or something like that, mixed yeah. with, you know, nowadays where it's like you can't, you know, do like a huge battle scene, like, you know, with all these huge things and like all these huge moving pieces, like in Twilight, you know.
Uh-huh.
The joke being that, have you seen that picture where it's like the final battle of all these huge, like all the big movie series of that time?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the final battle of Harry Potter and the final battle of Lord of the Rings and the final battle of everything. It's the final battle of Twilight. It's like 12 people in a field. But you can't do like any of those big things like Harry Potter on a stage.
Right.
You need a movie to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting, because this would have been, I don't know how many other, I know it didn't win an Oscar.
But it was nominated for 2.
Yeah. It took you a long time to find that out.
It was weird.
I just Googled the Oscars of that year.
No, you didn't.
That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did it. I Googled it. And a hoozle.
Huh?
I said any hoozle.
Any hoozle. One thing I thought when I was watching this, I was like, man, it's good to know there are other countries with terrible histories too. Because I think,
oh, theirs is worse.
I think we look at ours and we're so, like today, we're so ashamed of like slavery and the racism and all the terrible things we did to Native Americans and slavery and equality for women and all these issues. But it's like, well, that's terrible. But France had terrible stuff happen too, and they were lopping off people's head, like, for at least that's how they showed it in this, is it's like they're in trial and they're like, this guy knew some aristocrats, kill him. They're like, sweet. Well, and they're just like, man, you guys are bloodthirsty.
I mean, that's how it was. What a
dark period of time of history for, like, France.
I thought it's interesting, like, so many people, because they point to, like, these people saw themselves, I think a lot of them were like, well, the Americans just did it, getting up from underneath the same burden that they were enduring, you know, which was like these heavy taxes that were going to drive poverty, but Britain managed to avoid it largely through taxing their colonies very heavily.
Yeah.
And only losing their major one, but all the other ones still paid the taxes.
Right.
But they were, it was the same thing of the France taxing them and, you know, doing all this for the war and seeing how they were like, oh, well, they just did it. We'll do it too. Like, their colors are the same of the revolution and everything. And yeah. Both sides, the people doing, you know, the revolutionaries and the aristocrats were like, America, you got to help us out here, man. And we were like, yeah. Nope. We were a hard pass on it, which is kind of a, you know, it's just rude, you know, really.
Mm-hmm. So rude.
But it's interesting to see one was, you know, worked and one didn't.
It is very interesting.
One led to 200 years and the most powerful country in the world, and the other one led to Napoleon and France.
And France.
The loss of a world war. France
they
lost.
Got trounced
in one. They did an all right job in the First World War.
That's true.
But I'm going to go on record, Cody.
Uh-huh.
I've told you this before.
Yes.
First World War?
Mm-hmm.
France are the bad guys.
Yeah.
I read.
You think that?
Several things. And I've, you know, just done a lot of studying on that lead up to it.
So here's what you're saying.
Would have
you're saying if the Nazis weren't such a good villain for World War II that we might today look back at World War I and be like, oh yeah, probably France. Yeah, I would vote them as the bad ones.
No, because we were on their side.
Oh, that's a good point.
But we were only on their side because, you know, the things of like, hey, Mexico, invade the United States and we'll help you out.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, every level of Germany was like, nope, we're not going to do that. That's stupid. We need the U.S. to join us. France found out about it through their spies and they were like, we're going to make this sound like they did do that.
Use it as some propaganda.
Yeah.
As a bargaining chip. I love that. Was interesting. I did go to the World War One Museum here in Kansas City last month.
And you it know was it's the only World War One museum in the United States?
Right? I have heard this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Everyone says, there's no way. And it's like, all of them you've been,
there is a
World War Two.
Yeah.
It's the only one.
It was fascinating. Well, even just the ambiguity of World War One makes it a very interesting study. But I thought I'd spend 2 hours in there. We were there for like 4 hours. And I was like, I could have spent another 2 hours in here easy. It just, we were getting tired because it was a long day. But
it used to be just a room full of knickknacks.
Paddy wax and people giving bones to dogs.
Oh.
It was amazing. I mean, they've got a tank. They've got an actual biplane.
You go in the trenches?
Yeah.
You went in the trenches.
Really
the U-boat?
Cool.
They got a little U-boat you can go in?
I didn't go in the U-boat.
They got a U-boat.
They've got a big crater.
Your next time you're in Kansas City, listener, go to the U-boat.
Go to the U-boat. Yeah, really cool. Anyway.
Anyway, back to
maybe okay. Movie. Here's what I wrote. Here's what I wrote about Charles Darnay. Charles Darnay. He is very good at standing in trial. He gets tried. So at the beginning, you're like, he's got so much personality, and then soon after, you're like, nope. He's gonna stand at trial twice, and he's gonna stand there, looking all proper, and just stand there.
Yep.
It's like, man, he's good at that.
Oh, he is an aristocrat. He renounced his title, but he's still.
Yeah, he's known as
dirty, dirty aristocrat.
Dirty, dirty dog. Had for too good for too long.
Yeah.
I don't know. So maybe that's why, that's part of the reason too. I think the ending hit me so much, is like, man, I'm so glad, because I felt really bad when Sydney lost the girl, because you could tell he was interested, and then she just kind of, it felt like for no reason really, she really just fell for Darnay. But I'm glad that Sydney came to terms with it. I'm like, that's so great. And then he was so noble to accept the responsibility of taking that man's place and dying for him. But like, it's still like, then Darnay's just sitting there like, man, hope I don't get tried again. It's like, do something, Darnay.
Do something.
I don't know. It was just interesting to me at the end, there's just a Christian message at the end of the movie. It's like, there's no way a big studio like this would fund a movie this big in today's climate and be like, all right, now let's pop up some New Testament scriptures at the end of it. Just yeah. Very different time for filmmaking, different time in America.
Yeah.
Interesting to think about.
Very interesting. I think it's, you know, it's a... I mean, Charles Dickens.
Carlos?
Yeah. He had a lot of religious tones in all of his stories.
Oh, Christmas Carol especially.
It's just soups. Yes.
What?
I said soups. It's in super.
Got it.
But this one, you know, it's like, it's all about, you know, because you think about, right? Let's take a step back. You got Darnay, condemned by the sins of his father, his uncle, actually.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Carton, he steps right on in there, Sydney, steps right on there. He's like, you know what? Go. Be free. I'll die for you.
Oh, it's Christian.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very Christian.
No, his name's Sydney. But yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of, I know that was a big thing, point that he wanted people to notice. But I think the reason it has stood the test of time so well is because you could very easily ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it was all about that, it would have been shunned.
It's a good story
in our
otherwise.
Godless
for other reasons.
Society.
Yeah, and
y'all need.
I mean, the other big story point is just like, there's that lady with
Lady
the
Bird?
Jacques. No.
Oh.
French lady. Golly, yeah. Okay, so in one scene, she's like actually knitting. I was like, wow. And then in the next scene, she's very clearly fake knitting. I'm like, what? There was a scene earlier you were actually reaming some stuff and it looked real. On the next scene, it was just like, you're just twiddling knitting needles. What happened? Anyway.
It switches. She knits and sometimes she literally just, she has the knitting needles through it, but she's not like looping anything. She's just tink, tink, tink.
Anyway.
And then there's sometimes, but I bet you if you watch it, mm-hmm. The scenes where she has like an intricate dialogue, she's probably just titinking.
Right.
Because I notice when she's actually doing it, she has to look down every time she does a new loop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she gets like half a second to look at somebody.
Yeah. So anyway, like that lady.
Yeah.
I didn't understand her motivation. There's a point where she's like, basically her motivation is like, everyone from that line of that family must die.
Yes.
Because they do. And I was like, what? So everyone with that last name has to die no matter what?
Oh, what was that last name?
Evermond.
Hold!
I remembered. What?
The effing fart chamber, okay?
What?
You're cackling woman.
Yeah. What about her?
What is she credited as?
What? French hag.
The Vengeance.
I'm sorry. What? Is she a lady wrestler? Is that her name?
Oh, no. But that's just, I was just scrolling through trying to remember the madam that is knitting all the time, what her name was, and it's just like, The Vengeance. I'm like,
wow.
No. Anyway, continue.
I was just
going
to say, like, I just didn't get
about.
Like, so they go to trial, and then this person who she helped harbor as a fugitive steps up and says, hey, Darnay is fine. He's a good man. He helped me. He's a friend of the revolution. Please let him go. And everyone's like, that sounds pretty good.
Why is it important, though, to draw your attention back to something we totally... Why? So Dr. Manet,
mm-hmm.
Why is it important that he's speaking for him? Who put Manet in the Bastille?
Because Darnay's uncle. yeah. put him in the Bastille.
Yes.
So he's speaking out and be like, hey, I should hate this guy. I don't. He's a good guy, clearly. Okay. And then everyone's like, yeah, that sounds about right. Then she steps up and she's like, hold up, though. Here's the thing. No. And everyone's like, that is a great point. Let's kill him. I don't. It just didn't click with me. She went
through a whole
It was a whole thing, and she talked about how there was like a piece of paper that he lost that he was going to use as proof.
Are you serious?
Oh, no, no. It was a piece of paper he left behind condemning the Evermods.
Are you sucking my wiener right now? You don't remember her whole speech?
Yeah, okay, fine. How about you say the whole speech? Madame Defoe.
Okay.
It was dumb. I'll tell you that right now.
So he goes through the whole thing saying, like, you know, the Evermods put me in the Bastille for 18 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's fine. I let him marry my only daughter.
Right.
What more could you, you know, what more do I need to do?
Yeah.
They're all like, not guilty. And then she steps up and she's like, why did he go to the Bastille? Because he went to save a young woman, his doctor. The Evermonds killed her. So he spoke out against Evermonds. That's why he went there.
Yeah.
The Evermonds killed everyone in that family. They killed the older sister. They killed the mother. They killed the father. They killed the brother. They killed everybody except for one sister. Mm-hmm. I am that sister.
Okay.
So the person that died under his doctorship that caused him to speak out against the Evermonds was her sister,
uh-huh.
who their entire family, her entire extended family got wiped out by the Evermonds because they dared to be like, hey, you killed my sister.
Okay. You're right.
So her thing wasn't
justice?
They just need to die because they're... her thing was they all need to die, all of them, because they killed all of my family. All of them.
It's just weird to me, like, that she would say, hey, here's this thing from forever ago that this guy wrote saying, you know, condemning this family. But yeah. then he's there today in the flesh saying, like, no, 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 I'm okay. They're okay. This is a good man.
Yeah.
So that's just that just didn't make any sense to me. It's like, she's using something this guy wrote forever ago when he's standing here today being like, yeah, that was wrong. He's a good one. He's one of the good boys. Let him go, please.
Because they
came
got
all
him.
The way here. It just...
They got him.
It's just like...
That was his true thoughts.
The grossest, worst revenge. And then anyway, she dies, and I was happy about it.
Miss Pross got her.
That was a good fight scene. I liked that.
She shot her.
There was a really good, like, I mean, they tackled each other over a table. I was like, yes. That is not CG. That is like a stunt. They just
threw those actors in
and they just kicked them over a table.
I like how they sped it up. They always used to with those fight scenes. They would like do it super slow and then like, we'll speed it up. No one will notice. It's like, oh, you always speed it up too much though. You always dial it a little bit too much.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, she shot her.
That just really bummed. Like, I'm glad that she died. And I am happy, like, at the execution, everyone's like, where'd she go? I don't know. She's got to show up. She would never miss this guy's execution. Meanwhile, she's, like, bleeding out on the floor.
She has a regular spot at the executions.
Gross. Just the worst villain. And, like, I just couldn't even sympathize with her. I was like, you were the worst kind of
person. You weren't supposed to sympathize with her. She's a bad guy.
You just defended her.
Yeah, she's still a tool. But she had every right to demand his head.
No, she didn't. Because he didn't do anything. Big whoop, your family's dead.
His uncle's dead. Younger sister when she was like
great.
Four.
He's not his uncle. What
her
is
younger
so hard?
Sister wasn't her mother.
What is so hard about this?
Cody, I'm just saying, if you killed my entire family, I would kill your entire family.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
What I'm saying is she was in the mindset. She represented the mindset of France at the time.
Everybody.
That's what she's supposed to be.
Everyone associated with these people need to go because they made us suffer so much and did so much injustice by us. So justice is they need to suffer just as much by way of beheadings.
Well, so it's like it was, you know, back to America's awesome, France sucks, which is a running theme through the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first podcast where I've called out France. you know, where the rich peeps in America were like, no, we're gonna be better, we're not gonna be those noble creeps. and yet it still produced essentially noble families.
Yeah.
But they're like, nah, we ain't going to do that. Whereas, so the attitude, because of a few choice individuals, became, we'll be better than them. Whereas in France was like, now we're just going to do to them what they did to us, but there's a lot more of us and a lot less of them, so they ran out of nobles real quick.
Right.
And they're like, you saw a noble once? Dead.
Yeah. That poor lady, she's like a seamstress for a noble
once. Oh, she is a seamstress. She is credited as seamstress.
It was so sad. They were just like, hey.
Thanks to the pensions.
You sewed some sews for a rich person once, so you gotta die. And she's like, what?
I believe she was actually friends with someone who married a lesser, like the banished son of a lesser noble house or something like that. Crazy. Like, it was the most, like, where you grew up with this person? Yes. Well, they talk to a noble, and so you're gonna die. It's like, what?
Ugh, so
I don't terrible. Think she ever actually encountered the noble. I think it was she was friends with someone. Who married a noble or something like that.
So upsetting. I do not like France in this one.
No one ever likes France. More importantly, how'd you feel when Telson Jr. showed up? When they were all at the bank, all those French peeps? And he's like, I want to speak to Telson Sr. He's like, no, Telson Jr. will
Telson
talk to
Jr.
you.
Telson Jr. rolls up and he's like, 65?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that one's pretty fun.
Every time I watched that, I just wanted to tell him, like, I'm pretty sure Telson Sr.'s dead, guys. Like,
Telson Sr. just a meat puppet up top that they've just take a photo with every couple years. They're like, look, he's still here.
A photo, take a painting with him every couple years.
Oh, yeah, take a painting. Dang it.
Oh, but the movie, it's so good.
It is good. I think more than anything, just the excellent performances of the leading actors really just make this movie glow and stand the test of time.
I liked the excellent jowl performance of all of the judges and legal people.
I did enjoy watching the court scenes. Those were fun.
Even the jury were very jowly. Yeah. That one guy was eating something that I'm pretty sure was a bouncy ball because he kept cutting at it with a knife and seemed to eat the same piece of cheese every scene. And I'm like, it's not like they're just reusing the same scene. You're saying different stuff. You have a ball of something, but you have a slice of cheese on the knife. I was confused. He may have been, maybe it was a ball, like a thing of Gouda.
Yeah. It's interesting to see these kind of movies because, like, it's before people just had a television screen where they could run back footage and make sure there was continuity and everything, right? Mm-hmm. So, just, it's interesting to see, like, was there just some guy who's hired to watch and be like, hey, that doesn't look right. We need to do something different. I don't know. I just wonder.
Well, maybe it was the other director.
Or this is like, once again, back in the day of plays, where it's like there's only so much.
Wouldn't that be the director's job to make sure everything looked fine?
I mean,
that's literally what the director's job started being, was like, make sure everything looks good.
I don't know. I don't know the very beginnings of that. I forget the name of that today. There's a name for that.
Director of photography?
I mean, that includes like
the dude that looks through the...
There's like a name for a very specific person. That's
you're talking about
like,
the guy who looks through the little thing into the camera, and he's not the cinematographer. He's not the director of photography. He's here. But that's what he does.
I don't know.
Because those guys are the ones that complain in behind the scenes footage because James Cameron's all up in their business watching the back footage when he should be up there directing. But you know what I say to those guys?
What?
Call me when you've made, like, the top five best-selling movies of all time. Because when you've done that, then you can tell James Cameron to get out of your business.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Them Russo brothers, they're coming for him.
Oh, yeah, they are.
They are going to kill James Cameron.
Are they?
I heard him talking about it.
That's cool. Someone has to. Send him back to his ocean documentaries.
You can't kill him. You can just throw him back in the ocean and get rid of him for like 3 years. And then he comes back.
He's like, I need some more money.
Yeah, I need more money. Here's what I think, Cody. All of you guys, all of you movie snobs that hate James Cameron so much, just need to create a GoFundMe for James his Cameron, ocean.
You never stuff. Have to make another movie again. Just stay with your ocean docs.
Because if you guys could, through your hate, fund his ocean exploration, he would probably be fully like more than happy to accommodate your desires for him to not do an incredibly stressful job. Yeah. And continue breaking records as the man who's been to the deepest point of the ocean. Don't you think?
I do think.
Mm. So, Cody?
Yeah.
Have we made it through all your notes?
I'm out of notes. I had one other note. I do not understand what it meant. So
tell me the note. I will explain you your own note.
Ready?
Out of context. 1, 3, 2, 1, 4, go.
The period. Nice. What did I mean by that?
Oh, I remember I said something to you.
Dot, dot, dot. Nice.
Was there a period, period joke?
Maybe.
I thought I remembered us. Harold and Maude had so many sexy things that are bleeding into this one. I can't imagine this having a sexy period joke.
It could have been something with the titles, too.
Yeah.
Or even an intro saying, like, the period is this. I don't know. I don't remember why. If you watch this movie as a result of this podcast, I need you to tweet me and tell me why I made the note, the period. Nice.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the opening things, I think, is it was a period of great unrest or something like that. It's like what Star Wars ripped straight. Star Wars, like, ripped their opening thing straight out of this book. Which is, okay, all right. I showed this to somebody once, and they're like, why did they copy Star Wars? And I was like, oh, how dare you? Star Wars copied this.
It is funny. Like, I saw a documentary about George Lucas and Star Wars. Learned a lot about him in one of my film classes, and we just talked about how, like, oh yeah, half of Star Wars is just lifted straight from all the westerns that George Lucas watched as a kid. Oh, yeah. You know, the good guy is in white and the bad guy is in black, and then you've got the scrolling titles and you've got, like, all the stuff. You're like, oh yeah, this is all just stuff that were, like, established things in film that he lifted and was like, let's throw this in space.
Yeah, which, you know, I don't think he's ever tried to hide. He's always like, yeah. He's like, I just copied everything I liked.
I was under a lot of stress. It was just me out there and like four American actors and a bunch of British people that hated us. That's how Star Wars was made. Yeah. I sat in a warehouse for like weeks playing with toys and fishing wire to make your Death Star seem like I'm just this little film hermit.
Yeah.
Anyway,
now he's a rich boy. Wouldn't you love?
He's a film menace
to make something so amazing, and then people are like, "Yeah, I don't like it." When you try to make more, and then you're like, "Fine," and then you sell it to Disney for $1 billion,
and then you pass most of that money on to your staff and stuff.
Yeah,
you're like, "Ah, here you go."
Yeah,
I can't imagine
my favorite
selling
part.
Anything for $1 billion except for. My body.
My favorite part of all that,
what?
The whole Star Wars stuff, is people were like, "He midichlorians, what ruined it?" And I was like, "He made everything up. If he says midichlorians are real,
it's all
guess
canonical.
What, boy?
They're real.
There's a reason.
Grindelwald, Dumbledore, they boned. Deal with it.
Yeah, as crazy as Rowling is." Everything she says actually happened in the world. Because she owns all those people. Like slaves, but in her brain.
It's like when you're a kid. You know, kids play with their Barbies and they make them have sex, but you don't know what sex is. So just you rubbing your dolls against each other.
I did for the...
slap the dolls together.
Mash in motion.
Anyway, that's what J.K. Rowling is doing. but in her head, and we are humoring her by letting her tweet about these things.
Yeah. You doubted.
She took Dumbledore, she took Grindelwald, mashing them together.
You doubted. You doubted the crazy Rowling stuff.
Because you have said so many things that are so ridiculous, and it just so happens only that 20% of what you have said is true.
Only one of the tweets that I said was a fake one.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
She says some pretty ridiculous stuff.
She does.
There are some things. Now when I get the joke things coming in, I'm like, I don't know which one's a joke one or which one's a real one.
That's the point.
Because I'll be like, this one's a joke. There's no way this is real. And then I look it up and I was like,
that's a real one.
I'm looking at it on her Twitter. She did this. She's done this. Like the headmaster. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that? Dumbledore was known as the headmaster. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's real or not.
It's not real.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to think anymore, man. Ugh. She used the word aggressive. Or intense. She used the word intense. Not aggressive.
I think she said they had an intense sexual relationship.
I was like, I think we all assumed that based on what you'd already said, JK.
Thank you for spelling it out for us.
You know who didn't spell out the relationships?
Who?
Dickens.
It's true.
He's a classy fellow.
You weren't allowed to. And he's even paid by the word. J.K. Rowling is not paid for all those Twitter words she's sharing. No, she's not. Here's my question to you, Tyler.
Ask me this question.
Just in summation, wrapping this all up. Yeah. Which of the two cities is your favorite and why?
Do you want... No, I need a clarification question.
Yeah. You get one.
Are you asking for a serious which city, like which scenes, which parts of the story I preferred and which parts I felt were more impactful? Or do you want the joke?
Entirely arbitrary, please.
Okay, I will start with my real answer of I preferred the scenes that take place in Paris because I feel like they're much more impactful.
Feels I feel like Paris.
They are, the scenes in London are very much just sound, like, you know, just sets or like fronts of buildings that they just walk to. Whereas Paris, they built.
It really felt like Paris. When they were in England, I was just like, okay, this isn't Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, so that joke answer, London, because France sucks.
Tyler, I know this is your favorite movie. Who would you recommend this movie to?
Everyone.
Everyone?
Everyone.
Women?
Yes.
Children?
No.
The elderly?
Yes.
Flamboyant homosexuals.
Only everyone except for Tim.
Dreary homosexuals.
Oh, all of them.
They would really like it. It's very drab in parts and the squalor. They would really like that.
You know, I mean, we're talking about Sydney. We're talking about Donne. Too beautiful, man.
They are beautiful.
And then you got Lucy with those blue eyes. Those slightly lighter gray eyes.
Her eyes really popped in the black and white.
They did. They did find a way to make her look like real shimmery. In a good way, not in a Charlton Heston way.
Wow. Here's a fun fact for you.
Fun fact.
Her eyes are brown. The actress, Elizabeth Allen,
who plays
Lucy Manet. In the same year, it was in a different Charles Dickens adaptation. The 1935 David Copperfield.
You know who else was in that movie?
Who?
Yes.
Lawrence Welk.
No.
Charlton Heston.
You asked me. You were like, is it a Charlton Heston movie?
Who?
And I said, nay.
I mean, I'm looking right now. Do you want me to spoil
Ronald Coleman.
No. You're crazy.
Look it up.
I'm looking for him. Guess what? You're a liar. Ronald. Nope. Roland Young. Someone named Madge Evans.
David Copperfield. There it is. I clicked on it.
You know when someone's in a risque photo, but it's like risque because it was 1935?
Risque.
And like by today's standards, it's like, yeah, no, this is just an outfit. Anyway.
Maybe it was there is someone huge. I thought it was Coleman. Maybe it was a different movie he was in that year.
Yeah.
But somebody big, someone who took a major part in this movie, was also is it Edna, Miss Pross? She was in both of them.
That's what I thought you were going to say. No. Madge. Man, whatever happened to the name Madge?
It died. Maybe it was somebody. If you know who it was, write Cody a letter.
You can also tweet me.
No.
Add opinion hammers. Tell me everything. Tell me movies you want us to do. No one still to this day.
Because no one likes us.
Yeah.
No.
That's true. But if they do decide they want to torment their friends with us, how can they do that?
They could share us.
Oh, that'd be nice.
On all the podcast services, including Spotify.
It's new.
It's the new one. It's the new fresh, shiny boy on our list.
Hmm. I'm so excited about it.
Hashtag hyped. On all of them. I can honestly and confidently say we're on all of them.
All the ones that matter.
Except the ones that we're not on.
Oh, that's true. But those ones?
I mean, tweet.
Don't matter.
They don't matter.
Until next time. Have opinions.
And watch movies from the 30s.
Or not. Movies were worse then, right? Am I wrong in saying that?
Dare like, you make an accurate statement?
Gotten better since then. I stand.
You got it. Citizen Kane, which was awful.
We need to watch an Orson Welles movie for this.
We need to watch Citizen Kane. Really, above all else.
I don't want to. Here's the thing. That's fair. I feel like I need to see it because I want to know what Rosebud is.
I need to stop you right there.
What?
I think our little end thing has gone on too long.
Well, then we don't have to cut it off.
No.
Cut it.
We're going for another hour.
Take the guillotine.